Hi, I'm Deb Perlman, and you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. You're the bomb.
Hi, Bomb Squad. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Each week, we talk to the most inspiring women in and around the world of food. Let's thank our sponsor, Hansenbrook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's secret to making rich, flavorful eggs is simple. The most possible space, the best possible feed, and lots of love. It's a healthy and humane recipe that makes your soufflés, scrambles, shakshukas, and everything in between taste better. Get cracking at hansenbrookfarm.com. All right, a little housekeeping. I am so happy to report that our new issue started shipping this week. It's number 13, our Baker's Dozen issue, and our cover girl is none other than Samin Nosrat of Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. We all love Samin and her cookbook and her TV show, and we couldn't be happier that she's on the cover. Also in the issue, our first ever baker's survey. Find out the books, tools, and baked goods beloved by your favorite bakers. You can order the issue or subscribe on cherrybomb.com or reserve a copy at your favorite book or magazine shop like Book Larder in Seattle, Miracle Plum in Santa Rosa, California, and Casa Magazines in Manhattan. Buying our magazine is a great way to support projects like Radio Cherry Bomb. To all you longtime subscribers and stockists out there, you're the bomb. Now to today's episode. We are featuring three women who are changing the wine world. First up, the dynamic duo behind the phenomenon known as Yes Way Rosé, Nikki Huguenier and Erica Blumenthal. They have taken the rosé world by storm, and this spring they released their first book, also called Yes Way Rosé. It's a colorful collection of wine advice and rosé-inspired recipes. And after Yes Way Rosé, we'll hear from Cha McCoy, who is working hard to diversify the world of wine. Before we get to my conversation with Nikki and Erica, let's hear a word from our sponsor. Hansenbrook Farm believes that organic and pastured is the way to go when it comes to eggs. Pasture-raised means better lives for hens, better lives for small farmers, and better eggs for you. It's also better for chefs who depend on rich, flavorful eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's own flock of amazing chefs, their mother hens, count on it. Suzanne Vizethan is a mother hen. She's the chef and owner of Buttermilk Kitchen in Atlanta. Curious how Chef Suzanne makes her French toast with caramelized bananas? The ingredients include whole milk, ciabatta bread, and some Hansenbrook Farm eggs to make each slice as fluffy as can be. You can find Chef Suzanne's delicious egg-centric recipes and videos on hansenbrookfarm.com. If you're looking for Hansenbrook Farm organic pasture-raised eggs, you can find them at Publix, Kroger, Sprouts Farmers Market, Fresh Direct, and many natural food stores across the country. Enjoy my chat with Erica Blumenthal and Nikki Huguenier of Yes Way Rosé. For those who don't know what Yes Way Rosé is, what is Yes Way Rosé?
Yes Way Rosé is a wine and lifestyle brand intended to spread joy and happiness and positivity.
Now, when you launched Yes Way Rosé, what was the plan? What was the intention?
The plan when we launched, Nikki and I are best friends. We grew up together and we were obsessed with rosé and drinking it all the time and had all these inside jokes between each other. And it was consuming so much of our thoughts and time together, not even just drinking it, which was of course we were doing, but making each other crack up about it. And our texts back and forth were all about it. And we had all this energy, rosé energy, bottled inside. And we decided to start our Instagram in 2013 as the first place to share the beauty of the wine matched with the humor it was inspiring in our lives. And then really quickly after that, Nikki designed our tote bag and introduced our logo as a way to, you know, share our rosé spirit, and also because it was something we were enjoying in real life and we wanted to have something that existed in real life. And it was really very organic. There wasn't like we're intending to start a rosé brand. It was we need to do something with all of this, these ideas,
the vibes,
and
the rose vibe,
the creativity, and then we were able to grow from there.
So in 2013, were you both like, wow, we're going to turn this into a multi-million dollar business?
Erica would probably say yes, but I did no. I thought it was like a fun creative outlet. I think we didn't set out to create a brand, but we knew that we were doing something early on that was like something. We were getting great response from people.
I remember sitting in the backyard of Roberta's with the two of you on a day not unlike this one, eating pizza, drinking rosé, of course, and all of us just kind of laughing because like we had launched Cherry Bomb and you had launched Yes Way Rosé. And it wasn't our main gig. And just being like, oh, wow, look at these things we created.
At the beginning, I definitely didn't have a clear vision, but I knew that it felt really special, really right, really timed right. And I had actually dreams where I was flying in like pink skies. And I mean,
no,
I did. I couldn't sleep in like the best way possible. And it really kept me up at night thinking like, oh, we got to do this. And then
she finally convinced me.
But did you ever see the point where you would have your own wine? It would be
not
in Target.
At that point.
Yeah. Because it really was about other people then. And you, like you said, celebrating sort of the spirit and the vibes of Rosé, and other people like at that point were reaching out to you to kind of host parties and things like that, right?
Well, I think that was at the time, our experience, my background is in graphic design for fashion brands, and Erica being a writer in the fashion space, we were doing what we knew how to do, which was tell stories and participate in the media. And we didn't know that much about wine. It was really the love for rosé that led us into learning more about winemaking. So it took a couple years to get to the point where we realized, oh, we could actually have our own wine. Somehow, some way.
How important has Instagram been to your success? Could you have existed and grown into what you became without Instagram?
No, but also Instagram in 2013.
It was so new, really, that I would take people's phones at fashion shows and be like, you got to follow this thing that I'm doing. And people would be okay with that. Mm-hmm. If you took someone's phone now and followed an account from Instagram, they'd have you arrested.
I don't even remember if I had an Instagram account when Cherry Bomb launched. I don't think I did, because someone had my name. And I was like, I'm not going to be on Instagram if I can't have my name. And it was Laura Brown from InStyle who was like, dummy, you have to be on Instagram.
Well, Nikki really had the foresight to make it into a brand really early on. We use the same filter. She's like, if I'm going to do this, it has to look good. The art director, creative director, and her really kicked in. So if you look back on those early days, it looks way different than it does now. But it was very early stages of what Yes Way Rosé is. And each caption had to make us laugh. And we had an email back and forth with captions, and we just crack up all day about them.
I just remember it was so much fun to look at it. It was really beautifully curated. Everything was that blush pink. It was pre-millennial pink.
Yeah, we were really inspired by the specific color. That's what drew us to rosé. I mean, there was this wine that we loved drinking. We never had a drink before. And at the same time, it was that perfect peachy pink color that was like a dream hue, something we would want to wear. And it's very, you know, it's sexy and stylish and gorgeous, photographs well, and it took to Instagram pretty well.
So let's talk about, so this is still kind of your side hustle.
At that point, yeah.
At what point does this become your full-time job?
We had like two full-time jobs for a while. We both liked what we were doing before, and we live in New York, and we have apartments and all sorts of things. And it was, even at times we felt ready. We didn't really go full time until we were really ready and knew the money was going to be coming in and all of that.
Around what time did you make the jump?
I did it in stages. So I was working full time at Madewell, which I loved. And I just couldn't do it anymore. And it was time for something new. But I wanted to keep doing that, and I wanted to be working on Yes Way Rosé. So I think I had a year where I was just freelance designing and doing Yes Way Rosé, and then there became a point where I couldn't even handle the freelance design projects
Wow.
anymore.
I was freelancing too. I would do my the column
also, at the New York Times.
Yeah, then I was doing.
It's hard to give up gigs. I mean, yeah, you two have
you work your whole life.
You two had jobs, right? That people are dying to have.
Yeah, but I would also do copywriting for other brands, which was, you know, helpful to learn about, and did some work with Esquire, a lot of different magazines.
So when did you give it up, or did you not? Are you still?
I gave it up.
You did.
Yeah, okay. Felt really good. I mean, it was time. Mm-hmm. I felt that it was the right time, probably for a lot longer than, you know, I should have been doing all of these different things. But you know how it is. And when was that? Really, end of 2017 or 2016?
Yeah, I think it's been about 2 years that mm-hmm. we've both been full time.
And we've really skyrocketed since that. So I think that goes to show you that when you can be all in and fully go for it, that's really when you can take the next step.
We definitely took a huge pay cut, but we were passionate about it and we were okay with that. And we decided to accept that. And we're still working on that. But we also, I think it was the merch was our kind of, we had the tote bags and sweatshirts and we were selling all of this stuff online. And that really was the money that we used to fund our time to spend on growing the business.
It's also how we funded the business to begin with. I mean, little known fact, Yes Rosé started with $25 each for us to make our first tote bags. And we're like, we want to make 10. And then we kept on. And then our friend was making the tote bags. And she was like, you know, I did that one for you, but there's like a 50 bag minimum. And we really had to think about it because
big investment.
It was a big investment. For some.
That's so funny. Have you two raised money?
No. We're very proud of that. We're also maybe very controlling over that. We don't want to give up ownership. We've done this all together, so that's really important to us now. We'll see. You never know what's going to happen, but yeah, we do
figured out the ways.
So it's all been bootstrapped by you two?
Yep.
Okay. Any debt?
Yep.
Okay. A little bit. Not any amount that keeps me up at night.
Yeah. We're trying to talk more about finances this year, as you can tell as I pepper you with finance questions. You know, so many of the issues around Me Too and a lot of other stuff is just because we don't talk about who owns the businesses, who runs the businesses, how do women pay for business.
We own our business 50-50 and we have a beverage partner. And the way that deal works out is that they're putting up all the money, which is really how we've been able to grow that business. And that was a very conscious decision of how we wanted to grow our wine business. And we had actually met with a business developer, someone help us really figure out the directions we wanted to take our business in. And we did a lot of soul searching and we're like,
wait, go back to that. A business developer? I didn't even know there are people like that.
Yeah. We had all these different parts of our business that we liked. There was our merch and promoting other brands and collaborations and social media and content and all of that. And we were like, it was spread pretty thin and wanted to take it into a very intentional direction. And so we sat down and talked about everything we had going on and ways we wanted to grow. And that's when we identified we really want to go after Yesé Rosé wine. We want to go after a book. You know, we want to develop our lifestyle products in this way. And then that's what we set out to do. And that's what we're doing.
So have you written the business plan?
That was really the closest we got to writing a proper business plan. But it was like, we want to do this. We want to do this. We want to do this. And that's how we did it. We don't really have like a document that's like, this is what's happening in the next 5 years. But we talk about
it. Do you feel like you
it.
Need one?
We're in the midst of growing in the way that we want to. So there's like some new stepping stones.
Got it.
I think like we know what we're doing.
All right. Let's talk about your wine label, because I am so excited that you have your own wine. I mean, that is tremendous.
So are we.
Thank you.
Tell us how that came about.
Since we fell in love with rosé, it was all about the light peachy pink rosé from the south of France. Provence was like this dream world to us. We'd never been, but we fantasized about it. And that was the rosé that really led us to this passion. So we wanted to find a way to create something like that to bring to the people. We explored multiple ways of how we could do that and ended up with a beverage partner who's an importer that we work with to make wine from France. And it's pretty amazing.
So yeah, we went to France and worked with a winemaker, had a lineup of 12 blends and kept on going back to this one. And that was the wine that we chose to bottle as Yesir Rosé. And Nikki designed the packaging with the brilliant ombre cap. Have to thank her
and
for that.
And the same logo that was on that tote bag or tote in 2013.
Amazing.
That hasn't changed.
So you have two wines.
We have Yesir Rosé wine.
I was trying
wine.
To think what the fancy term was, but it's wine. You have two wines.
And Yesir Rosé bubbles.
Okay.
And this year we also introduced our Yesir Rosé wine in cans. So it's the same wine that's in the bottle, but in these super cute cans that
I'm
Nikki
holding one of them right
also
now.
Designed the packaging for them.
Nice work, Nikki.
Thank you.
Is your wine exclusively in Target?
The cans are in Target only right now, but our original wine that we launched last spring is now widely available,
wow.
which we're so excited about.
Are you
about.
Distributed nationally?
Yes. So we're in almost every state.
And in Manitoba in Canada. We're starting to cross the border.
Wow.
So,
oh my God, I'm
yeah,
so excited for you too.
This is a huge year for us. And we introduced the wine last year. Target was a really incredible supporter and is an incredible supporter of the brand. And so then now we've been traveling around the country and meeting with our distributors. And we just spent a few days in Baltimore, where we're from, going to wine stores and introducing the local shops to our wine.
Do you two consider yourselves wine experts now?
I think we consider ourselves rosé experts.
Tell me about your knowledge today versus your knowledge back in 2013. Like, when you look back at the two young women you were in 2013, were you like, God, we knew nothing about rosé, and now we know everything?
I literally knew nothing about rosé. I did not know it was made from red grapes. Which, it's okay if you don't know that now, I'm telling you now. Rosé is made from red grapes, and the color comes from the skin and how long the skin stays in contact with the juice during the winemaking process. That was something that I did not know in 2013 and is kind of Rosé 101.
Erica, how about you? When you look at the Erica of 2013...
So much more. I think there were some fundamental things that I knew, like the color that I liked and that I wanted to be dry, and that I was really drawn to the rosés from France. Those were like the three big things that I knew. But I mean, we know so much more now. It's crazy. I mean, we go to France and we were tasting wine and going to the wine facilities and winery, and so we're learning a lot.
Okay, let's take a look at this book, Yesway Rosé, A Guide to the Pink Wine State of Mind. You two should be so proud. It's such a charming book. I know you were really awesome and got me a very early copy. In case you're wondering, like, a whole entire book about rosé, yes, is the answer. What is in this book?
It starts out with our story and goes into a very accessible Rosé 101, winemaking process, rosé geography, all the places around the world where rosé is made. There's a whole section on rosé vibes and really just that thing that makes rosé so special. And then, yes, recipes in the back and food pairing suggestions.
Rosé recipes. There's a whole section
on rosé. Where do you stand on rosé today? Rosé jumped the shark a little the other summer, right? Last summer?
I think that it's ready to really happen.
To come back.
It's really happening.
2019 is the year of the Rosé comeback. You heard it here.
Yeah.
Well, we've always been a fan of the Rosé ice cube, as you know.
Oh my God, we didn't even talk about the Rosé ice cube.
We talk about it in the book, too.
I think we've talked about this every time you've been on the show, but I was scrolling through Instagram, as one does, and Nikki and Erica had posted Rosé ice cubes, and I was like, oh my God, stop the presses. It literally was like, if you have leftover rosé, but whoever has leftover rosé, if you have leftover rosé and you put it in an ice cube tray, because I'm not embarrassed to say I like ice in my rosé.
I love ice in my rosé.
You do?
I don't, but I like a rosé ice cube in my rosé on a summer day.
So I have no shame, and everybody knows I love to go to Paris. And you are treated like just a barbarian when you ask for ice for your rosé, but I don't care. nothing is sadder, I think, than warm rosé. When I saw your rosé ice cube thing, I was like, this is a game changer. So yeah, you literally just take your leftover rosé, put it in an ice cube tray, and then you have this. It doesn't get rock solid.
It's like a slushy, solid ice cube consistency.
Yeah, yeah.
Solid enough, though, to use. I'm certainly to put into a glass of rosé to keep chilled, but also we like to pour some soda water on top for a little spritz. It's like a slowly developing cocktail.
Okay, so rosé ice cubes, lots of cocktail recipes in here, but then also like cakes and savory things.
For the food we wanted to do, we wanted to organize it around different parties. So there's an entire pink party where all the food is pink, and the ladies at Ovenly made us our dream rosé-infused cake. And we did an entire meal inspired by Julia Child, which is all French pairings.
So some of the food actually has rosé in the recipe, and some of it is just meant to be enjoyed alongside as a perfect pair.
How was the process of doing a book?
It's awesome.
It's the hardest thing I've ever done. I was very involved in the process. I did all the art direction for the photography, worked with an amazing team on that. There's a lot of beautiful photos in the book, and all the fonts in the book are, you know, are the fonts we've been using for our brand. So I was definitely very involved.
All right. So it's rosé season. You go into a wine shop, you're confronted with, you know, dozens of bottles of rosé. How do you choose one? How do you decide? How can you tell from the label, from what information is on the label?
Well, if you're new to rosé, and I would suggest starting with a classic dry French rosé, and definitely ask if you're in a wine store, ask someone who works there for help. But that's a good way to start because that's the motherland of rosé. And find something that's light and ask for dry and, you know, Côte de Provence or from the south of France. So start with something very classic, a classic rosé. And then I would say evolve into other regions. Buy an American rosé, buy a canned rosé from Oregon, or, you know, then start traveling around the world.
And try rosés from different regions.
Where do we like? Well, we like Chiaretto from Italy. There's good Argentinian rosé, good California rosé, good Hungarian rosé.
So don't limit yourself to France.
Don't limit yourself to France, but start there.
All right. We are going to switch to the speed round. Just so everyone knows who's speaking, we're going to have Erica, then Nikki.
Okay.
Alphabetical order. All right. Favorite kitchen tool?
Oh, my pink Le Creuset cast iron skillet, which I see that you guys have the collection here.
Not the full collection.
Not the full collection.
We have a lot of pieces. It's our pride and joy.
Me too.
Nikki?
My favorite since we've launched our bubbles is a wine stopper. So that when you don't finish a bottle of bubbles, you can put a handy stopper in and still have some bubbles the next day.
Song that makes you smile.
The whole Beyoncé Homecoming album, specifically Crazy in Love, when it breaks down into the back that ass up part, I'm obsessed.
We're pretty obsessed with Lizzo right now, too. Truth Hurts is my favorite.
Food you would never eat.
I'd never eat like a spoonful of mayo.
Oh my God. You're the only person who ever said that, but that might be the best answer ever. Nikki?
I don't eat like foie gras or pâté, which always disappoints my French friends when we are in Provence, but I just can't with it.
Favorite ingredient to cook with?
Oh, that's a good question. Salt.
Rosé.
What's a cookbook you love that you did not write?
Julia Child, Mastering the Art.
I love Kolu Henry's book, Back Pocket Pasta. Kind of a pasta addict.
We love Kolu here at Radio Cherry Bomb. What's the oldest thing in your fridge, Erica?
I don't know. Maybe ketchup or something? Is that old?
I think I have, some mustard that I never use, like a Dijon mustard. Does that go bad? Probably.
I don't know, actually.
I'm going to check it.
It does go bad
home.
Eventually. Okay, yeah. I don't know. We should find out the answer to these questions. Dream vacation destination.
Patagonia.
Morocco.
All right. Erica, if you were trapped on a desert island with one food celebrity, who would it be?
Oh, Gwyneth.
Because?
I mean, I'm just a lifelong Gwyneth person. I like characterize myself as like, you know, rosé lover, Gwyneth person, like among other things. I think she's funny and smart and loves food and fashion and all sorts of fun stuff.
I love Chrissy Teigen. Kind of obsessed with her. I'm not a huge Twitter person, but I think I have Twitter outside of Yes We Rosé just to follow Chrissy Teigen. She's so funny. And she can cook.
Thank you to Nikki and Erica for coming back on the show. We'll be right back after these messages.
Grab your notebooks, Bomb Squad. We're going back to school this summer with a brand new radio show, Cherry Bomb University. Each week, we'll be offering crash courses taught by your favorite members of the Bomb Squad to get you cooking, eating, and thinking like the smart cookie you are. Thank you to Le Cordon Bleu for making this series possible. You can learn more about Le Cordon Bleu at cordonbleu.edu. See you in class.
Next, we have a special talk from our Jubilee 2019 conference with sommelier and entrepreneur Cha McCoy. Cha's talk is titled More Than Moscato, and you're about to find out why. Introducing Cha is filmmaker Maya Oren.
I am Maya, and as Carrie actually told me one time, I am an OG Bomb Squad member. I've been coming since year one. I was born to immigrant parents, and I've had the privilege of experiencing both Israeli and Trinidadian cultures from a young age. In Israel, at my grandparents' house, the scent of flowering jasmine coupled with bus exhaust hit my nostrils, the sun warmed my shoulders, and the sound of children laughing, their shoes slapping the sidewalks, sounded in the air around us. We'd always be greeted by a plate of seasonal fruits. I would take a bite out of one, its soft flesh giving way to sweet, juicy goodness. My grandmother would lovingly place her hand on my knee. From a young age, I fell in love with everything that happens around the act of eating. My memories drip with detail, and I grew up wanting to share these experiences. Naturally, this led me to enter the industry by way of filmmaking in my early 20s. It was around 2011, and I remember telling my dad that I was gonna film chefs and restaurants for a living, and he laughed at me. He suggested that I focus on weddings where I was guaranteed pay. This is a Jewish dad. But I never planned to be a cinematographer or a photographer in that sense. My interest at the core of it all always resided in food and telling the stories of the experiences around that. So I started a blog, following my stories of the culinary landscape in the US and abroad. Slowly, I gained a following and then clients, and my business, Mohalvo, an agency focused on visual brand direction, was born. Currently, I live in Washington, DC, where I'm a proud part of a vibrant, female-dominated culinary landscape. It's really, really special. Clients of mine, including some currently in the audience, who I spent some time with this morning, Chaya, a vegetarian taco concept, and Compass Rose and Maidan, are owned and operated by strong women. Last fall, I traveled to Tbilisi, Georgia with the Compass Rose team, documenting their visit to the vineyards they buy their skin contact wine from. We stayed with Baya's Wine, a dynamic winemaker duo, to help them with their harvest. We awoke at dawn. I pulled back the curtains glowing with amber light from the sunrise, and rows of green vines laid below us. We drank coffee and ate hachapuri and made our way to the vineyard with scissors and crates. I recorded the sound of snipping vines, heavy clusters of grapes thudding satisfyingly at the base of the buckets, and chickens clucked in the distance. I filmed visuals of hands as they became increasingly sticky from the grape juice and the impromptu cha-cha shots that were poured for us mid-harvest. I can still remember the taste of the grape that I ate straight from the vine before the harvest was carried off to the room of quevries where the grapes would ferment. While all of these might just sound like details, we build our lives around these stories. We live to feel connected to each other and to a greater purpose. And so when these visuals get shared in DC, suddenly a glass of wine becomes a journey to a vineyard halfway across the world, where two sisters are tirelessly and passionately fermenting grapes harvested in the Georgian sun. Like my trip to Georgia, our next speaker, Cha, has traveled to several wine-focused countries, uncovering similar stories, learning and weaving together the knowledge she garners to share with her audience. She uses these stories to empower and educate across all ethnicities, fighting social stigmas and allowing for us all to embrace our sophisticated palates. I'm incredibly humbled to share this industry with powerhouses like Cha, and I'm in complete awe of her story. Cha, like me, has taken her passions across many vocations and built a career out of them. She balances a life working in both engineering and hospitality and stands ground for a shift of representation and perspective in the wine industry. Every morning, I wake up in this body, a woman of mixed race, proud to be a part of this shift. Cha reminds me that the women who are now coming into this industry are trailblazers. We are perseverant, and we are not afraid to do something out of the ordinary. It's about time that we embrace our diversity and elevate one another for our accomplishments. So without further ado, I pass the stage on to Cha. I cannot wait to hear from this woman who's doing some incredible things around my favorite topics, and probably many of you, travel, food and wine, and most importantly, culture and the art of gathering. Thank you.
An NPR article from the Nielsen Group that tracks wine retail sales states the following. African Americans are 3 times more likely to drink Moscato than some other type of table wine. It went on to say the following about Moscato: much more African American, much more Hispanic, much younger, much lower income, and much more female. Hi, I'm Cha McCoy. I'm a black woman, and I'm more than Moscato. Allow me to take you on a journey. So my initial experience with wine began like most American millennials. To be honest, it was box wine. I thought it was a sweet yet classy version of what my friends were doing, basically drinking Keystone Light beer. So I never questioned or had a second guess about the world of wine beyond the sweet category until I took a leap of faith and decided to move to Italy. Nevertheless, I'm convinced, like my move to Italy, entering the wine industry was predestined for me, and here's why. You see, my father at a young age was forced to change his identity due to his chosen illegal career path. He adopted a new date of birth, New Year's Day, which then inspired the last name Champagne. As a young adult in the streets of New York City in the 70s, with the last name Champagne, I can only imagine the high expectations people have for him as it relates to food and wine. Taking on his new persona, my father led to opening a restaurant, actually going to culinary school, and eventually passing on his sophisticated palate to his future children. My brother and I was exposed to the many cultures of New York City through food. And at the finest restaurants, we were often commended as black children from Harlem on how well-behaved we were in primarily white and adult environments. In my preteens, I equally enjoyed eating snails and black bean sauce in Chinatown as I did having escargot. My exposure to these abnormal spaces in gastronomy as an inner city kid pushed me to perceive the world and my palate beyond Harlem in the cliche soul food. Perhaps this is why during my senior year of high school, when I was tasked to write my autobiography, I made a declaration for my future goals that I almost forgot about. Years later, as I was deciding to relocate to Italy and achieve my MBA, my mom pulled out that same high school autobiography and it stated, I moved to Rome. I made my choice to move to Italy during a time of my life when I was feeling unfulfilled and in search of a new appetite of living. Yes, dare I say, a true eat, pray, love moment. My experience while there gave me clarity and in hindsight elevated my vision for the world, my personal goals, and my appreciation for the wine and food industry. Wine and food pairings became a way of life to me because to Italians, it's basically religion. Learning what grows together goes together was the only wine lesson I needed to know living in Italy, and it was very easy to find compliments because in Italy, all 20 regions are wine regions. Italy helped me to expand my wine palate beyond box wines, Moscato, Pinot Grigio, and Prosecco, which were often served to me in New York City. I began to appreciate the subtle differences of Italian white wines, like those citrus, floral, and acidic notes and appearing ability of a Verdecchio, Vermentino, and a Vaspiola. I was a new woman on a new journey. I developed a genuine interest in the industry after my time in Italy, and eventually traveling to other wine countries on a quest for similar experiences and education. After returning to the States in 2012, I realized that New York City nor the world was ready for someone like me. My newly enhanced palate and wine knowledge didn't fit the mold, so I was continuously viewed and serviced like another statistic, black, female, and millennial, which was no surprise to me. while ordering in restaurants. I've been questioned. Yes, questioned by waiters because I chose an obscure grape. They say someone like me usually don't pick these type of wines. I even selected a wine for the table in some instances, and the sommelier still chose one of my white colleagues to taste the wine after I made the selection, which my friend and I would then have to address and correct. And no, I'm not just making this up. A New York City bartender quoted in the Vine Pair article states, when a group of ethnic women comes in, I've been instructed to use bottom shelf booze. As far as I know, they've never been able to tell a difference, and their only concern is how good I look and how fruity the drinks are. Dealing with reverse culture shock after my return to the States, I felt a call to be a part of the solution. I noticed there was a hole in the market for women of color in the wine industry. So at home, in a freshly gentrified Harlem, I applied for a job at one of the few curated wine shops in the neighborhood. Here I was accepted, not trapped into how America sees me, and I was able to share my wine knowledge, experience in vineyards, and even drop a few lines of Italian. I eventually enrolled in the following wine education programs: the WSET, Wine Spirits and Education Trust, the Court of the Masters of Sommelier, and eventually became a certified sommelier. I recognize in order to have a seat at the table and a voice in this industry, these exams and trainings will be required to gain the respect from the wine industry. These certifications also helped me to better serve my community and elevating our experience and wine knowledge collectively. While working in a wine shop, I often heard customers say how intimidating it was to select wine. I took this as a charge to help remove the barrier between wine and people and decided to create the experience called the Communion. The Communion is a wine and food pairing, multi-course tasting dinner. During this dinner, I share stories about wine pairings with fresh Bufala Mozzarella in Italy in the prestigious red wine region of Barolo, and popping sparkling Franciacorta, the Italians' true response to champagne, while driving my friends in a boat around the island of Capri. I recognize this may not be in everyone's future, but through me, the Communion attendees receive a taste of a life that actually now seems obtainable. I'm also proving that we don't have to be rappers or movie stars to love all wine or have a sophisticated palate. I remind my guests that wine is simply fermented grape juice, tended to by farmers, and that can be the beverage of choice for all people, which removes the snobbery and elitist views on how wine is marketed. Wine has become my vehicle to communicate, connect, and challenge people in societal norms within gastronomy. Well, it's clear that my hospitality experience during my youth, my world travels, and wine certification makes me an outlier in relation to statistics, but it also makes me qualified to challenge the industry to take action. It first starts with the top-down approach to treat all guests equally, which should include but not be limited to educating all consumers equally about the wine list and food pairings, hiring wine and spirits trained staff that match the demographics of your community, holding diversity sensitivity trainings for all employees, hiring people of color and women as your beverage directors and consultants to facilitate said trainings, like me. Prejudice can be unintentional and unfortunately intentional. However, it's up to us to challenge it and shift the narrative. In order to reclaim the hospitality industry as a welcoming place for all people, I'd be happy to speak with anyone further about solutions on how we can encourage and educate the key holders on how to market wine and spirits to women and people of color and create an inclusive service environment. Again, my name is Cha McCoy. I am a Black woman, and I'm more than Moscato, and that's because I enjoy Barolo, too. Thank you.
Cheers to you, Cha. You're an inspiration. Thank you for speaking at this year's Jubilee and for all the work you're doing. That's it for today's show. Thank you also to Nikki and Erica for stopping by CBHQ and telling me all about their book, their brand, and their beverage of choice. If you're looking for an amazing summer sip or just want to support these two, be sure to pick up a bottle of their rosé and don't forget to check out their book. Thank you to our sponsor, Hansen Brook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs, for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. You folks are excellent. Radio Cherry Bomb is a production of Cherry Bomb Media. Our show is edited, engineered, and produced by Jess Seidman, and our theme song is All Fired Up by the band Tra La La. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hi, my name is Amy Larson. I'm the founder of Overseasoned, a culinary retail brand based in Boston, Massachusetts. Do you want to know who I think is the bomb? Madison Trapkin, the founder and managing editor of Girl Squash, a women's art, food, and culture publication. Madison is as passionate about intersectionality as she is about delicious food, and it really shows in her publication.